Special Committee on Energy to order. It's approximately 3:05. Today is January 26th. Present are committee members Representative Tuck, Vice Chair Johansson, Co-Chair Millett, and myself, Representative Edgman. Today we will be hearing two bills and actually sort of holding initial hearings on the Omnibus Energy Bill, House Bill 305, and the State Energy Policy Bill, which is House Bill 306. And before we get to the presentations on those bills, just a couple of sort of housekeeping items. Obviously, to let everyone know that cell phones are be kept on silent, and if they go off, there may be a penalty of cookies or not. We haven't decided yet what that might be.
Oh, God.
But we wanted to sort of preface, and I think maybe that might be the proper way to put this, these two bills and all the work that's been done sort of leading up to this point. So, Co-Chair Millett, did you want to talk a little bit about that?
I'm tired of hearing myself.
The interim work that we did, sort of taking us to where we are today and actually sort of introducing these bills and hearing them.
Oh, yes, you're serious? Oh, sure.
Yes.
Thank you, Co-Chair Edgman. The two bills that we're going to hear today are, like Bryce said, HB 305 and 306. First, I'll talk a little bit about 306, the state energy policy. One of the first things that we decided last year when the Energy Committee was formed that we needed to have some tangible measures of our committee work, and we agreed that one of the things that we thought we could get to in a session's time was the codifying a state energy policy. One of the few states that currently doesn't have a stated energy policy or guidelines for developing energy strategies for energy independence for our state. So we took that on. I think a lot of you here have heard us talk about how that took place. We got a group of stakeholders together. I think Adam and Jeff will go over who those stakeholders were. This is not a legislatively driven group. It was all done by stakeholders. Representative Edgman and I sat in as with some other legislators. I think Representative Tuck was there, Representative Peterson was there, Representative Johansson was there. So we was a stakeholder-driven bill. So it's a really great piece of work that they did, and I think now as it goes through the committee process, I'm anticipating that we'll pass and move out of the House and over to the Senate side. So that's the omnibus bill. There's a lot of good things in there. A lot of cooperation went into that bill. The second bill is the omnibus bill, which is the inclusion of 9 bills that we had in our committee, both from the Senate side and the House side, that we took the best parts of those bills and put them together, and also has some language that we came up with and our staff came up with on some public education and some building things that we thought were a good idea on state-funded schools. So that's part of the bill, and so we're excited to start vetting the process and learning, what's good and what's not so good, and where we can perfect the bill as it goes through the process. And that was a labor of love. We spent part of last year in our interim traveling to 13 different communities to get feedback. We met with the AFN. We had the first legislative hearing ever with AFN. It was a big honor. We had a joint committee hearing. We also had a committee hearing with AML, and so we've had a lot of input into these two pieces of legislation, and I'm glad we're to this point now. It's exactly where we thought we'd be last year when we started down this road, and we look forward to working with the committees of referral and our members and members of the other body to put something in statute.
Thank you, Co-Chair Millett. With that, we'd like to call the table Adam Berg from my staff and Jeff Turner from Representative Millett's staff.
I think we're going to do Chris and Bill first if possible.
Oh, okay. Okay. I stand corrected. I'm sorry. We have online, and actually this pertains to House Bill 306, the state energy policy legislation. We have online Bill Pop with Anchorage Economic Development Corporation, hopefully, and Chris Rose with REAP, Renewable Energy Alaska Project. Gentlemen, are both of you on?
Yes, we are. This is Chris, and Bill's sitting right across the table from me.
Okay, excellent. We have your PowerPoint up on the wall here. Chris and Bill, if you want to just jump in and kind of walk us through the bill, if you would, please.
Okay, for the record, my name is Chris Rose. I'm the Executive Director of Renewable Energy Alaska Project, and I was one of the stakeholder advisory panel members, and I appreciate the opportunity to testify here today before the committee, and thank the committee for all the work that's gone into getting this bill put together thus far. This whole idea, as co-chair Millett has already pointed out, it got started because Alaska doesn't have an energy policy per se that really looks at how Alaskans are going to get their energy. It's really important that we put together some kind of a vision for how Alaskans are going to heat their homes, light their businesses, transport themselves. And so this is a holistic vision of how we might be developing energy resources for ourselves, both for residential, commercial, and industrial uses, as well as making sure that we include electricity, heating, and transportation. So all of the different energy needs that we have here in the state of Alaska. And it was the idea was to put together a set of guiding principles that we could use to set goals. So the goals are not in here. Once we have those strategic goals, the idea is that we can then implement, put together plans that we can implement and actually create projects. So the idea was to have a hierarchy that starts out with a policy that we would create through this bill. As was mentioned, the stakeholder advisory panel was a diverse group of folks besides co-chair Edgman and Millett and staff Attenberg and Jeff Turner, Larry Persley, who was legislative staff at that time to Representative Hawker, was also at the meetings, as well as Glenn Holdman from Alaska Center of Energy and Power, Robert Venables from the Southeast Conference, Scott Goldsmith from ICER, Jason Bruni from Resource Development Council, John Davies from Coal, Climate, Housing Research Center in Fairbanks, Ralph Anderson from Bristol Bay Native Association in Dillingham, Bill Popp, who's sitting here with me from AEDC, Bob Pulowski and Denali Daniels from Denali Commission, Caitlin Higgins from Alaska Conservation Alliance, Stacy Schubert from the Municipality of Anchorage, Marilyn Leland from Alaska Power Association, Mira Kohler from Alaska Village Electric Co-op, Ron Miller, and Kathy Wasserman from Alaska Municipal League.
And on the next slide, Madam Co-Chair, Mr. Chair, this is Bill Popp with the Anchorage Economic Development Corporation. I'm President and CEO of the organization. I, too, was honored to be a part of the stakeholder group, and I'm very pleased to be able to testify to the committee today. We're now on the purpose slide of this particular presentation, just to help Adam out a little bit there. The focus of this whole effort was to develop an energy policy as the touch point, the basis, the foundation that all efforts to establish goals and then to design strategic initiatives, both from a policy point of view and legislative point of view, but also from a spending point of view, could then flow from a state energy policy. And so by adopting the policy, you in effect align both the efforts of state government and its political subdivisions, but you also align the efforts to spend and invest in the energy future of the state of Alaska. And this would lead to a comprehensive energy plan that would achieve those strategic goals. And that was the agreed upon principles from the members of the stakeholder group. So if we get the next slide, and Chris?
And not to hammer this point home too much, but the idea, again, was to start out with a policy that we could then develop those goals from. An example of a plan, and this is recognized in the bill itself, is the Regional Integrated Resource Plan for the Rail Belt, because we did acknowledge in this piece of legislation that we are going to have to recognize the diversity of our geography here in the state, so plans may well wind up being regional plans. And then from those plans, we'll be developing the programs and the projects that we can use to reach the goals that we've set our sights on.
And if we could get the next slide. The principle of guiding this process was that our future economic success, our future as an economy, is hinged on the available, reliable, and affordable energy for residential, commercial, and industrial users. I mean, that's an absolute. If you don't have a good, solid energy base that is affordable given local conditions, then you're not going to grow the economy of the state of Alaska. And we also came to recognize that the worldwide supply and demand for fossil fuels and also climate change is going to affect the price of fossil fuels in the future. We all saw the run-up of oil to an excess of $140 a barrel. We all saw the horrific downstream downstream effect that had on the cost of diesel fuel and even natural gas here in the Rail Belt, it had phenomenal consequences for any number of businesses and communities. And so this policy is founded on the recognition that we need to be more diversified in our viewpoint. And if we could get the next slide, and I'll turn it back to Chris.
Just going along with that whole idea of the worldwide supply and demand of fossil fuels and climate change, what we are saying there is not necessarily that fossil fuels are not what we want to be using in the future at all. On the contrary, what we're trying to do is say we need to anticipate what is happening on the planet and that we're involved in a worldwide economy and that supply and demand is just going to be driving those prices up. So we have to take that into consideration from the beginning when we decide what we want to do as goals. And if you look at the legislation, really there are some abstract goals that are in there that we hope will actually become more concrete with future initiatives and programs. But for instance, because fossil fuels are going to be trending upward, energy efficiency is super important. And that was the first thing that we all agreed upon was needed in this piece of legislation so that we could really highlight the need for energy efficiency. The cost to save energy is always less than the cost of producing that same amount of energy. Return on investment just makes economic sense. And so we really wanted to make sure that we had some information, that we had language in this bill that said energy efficiency really has to come first. Beyond that, we wanted to encourage economic development through the promotion of both renewable energy resources and non-renewable energy resources, and figure out a fiscal regime that we can use to make sure that both of those are sustainable over time. We also included language to identify and assist with workforce development and technical assistance in our communities, because we are going to have to do that as we expand our development of new energy resources. And also the research and development aspect was something that we all recognized was really important. The last aspect of the bill that has language in there is coordinating governmental functions. We want to make sure that we are streamlining regulatory processes while protecting the public interest and have some kind of a place where there's a clearinghouse for information that all agencies can use, and we can collaborate more and better than with federal agencies.
Adam, we're going to stay on the same slide, and I'm going to talk about a little bit about the starting point that was used for developing this policy. In the Tri-Borough Commission energy policy document, which was initiated under the administrations of Matsu Borough Mayor Menard, Municipality of Anchorage Mayor Begich, and Kenai Peninsula Borough Mayor John Williams, was started in a process that began in October of 2007. And they put together a fairly diverse group of task force members that represented utilities, renewable energy, and also industrial and commercial needs within the region, as well as energy efficiency in the University of Alaska. Through that process, that was a consensus process, they developed the energy policy document that was used and adopted by the House Energy Advisory Group as a starting point, and that is threaded throughout the legislation that is before you today. And that document was finally approved by the Triborough Mayors in February of 2008. It was a very rapid consensus process. And 16 goals that were also recognized and discussed and in part incorporated into this discussion came out of that document. But it was readily recognized by the Triborough Commission that this would be a document that was appropriate specifically to the South Central region. It was not designed to be a statewide energy policy. So you're going to see some differences between the original Triborough document and the legislation before you today. But we all agreed that many of the principles in this policy could be applied statewide. Adam, if we could get the next slide.
This goes over some of the items that I just talked about, but I think what I'll say here is to describe the process a little bit. These stakeholder meetings began in July, and we met about once a month through December. And there was kind of an ebb and flow in the way that the group worked with the co-chairs of the committee, in that we started out with a relatively small document, not too dissimilar from what we have today, and then it kind of ballooned up to about a 7 or 8 page list of goals. And I'm describing that because I think we all looked at those goals and we all said, well, these are all really important goals. But then we all decided as a group and we came to consensus that rather than putting those goals together now and including them in this legislation, it made way more sense for us to stick to the original notion, which was let's describe a policy, again, a set of guiding principles that we can use, and then let further processes down the road describe what those goals should be. So we all decided that we would take away our pet goals that we had put into the document and all agreed that it would be better to just take those out. There are some goals that we agreed we might put into the legislative intent language, and that those are there before the committee. The 15% increase in energy efficiency on a per capita basis between now and 2020, 50% electric generation from renewable energy by 2025, work to ensure a reliable in-state gas supply, as well as using the Power Project Loan Fund as a main source of assistance for energy projects. But we all agreed those are goals that we wanted to include only in intent language.
Chris, if I could just interject for the record, have the record reflect that Representative Peterson just joined us at the table. Pete, welcome.
Adam, if we could get the next slide. So the steps going forward that the advisory group strongly recommend is that first and foremost, before any legislation to establish a plan is put into place or any structural spending ideas are passed, it is vital to establish the energy policy. Without that overarching policy that brings into alignment all aspects of state government and its political subdivisions, any other effort is going to be challenged and is going to have a much lower opportunity for success in terms of being rationally thought out spending and investment and legislation and regulatory regimes, etc. And then to develop the goals that flow from that policy, again, before spending and regulatory bodies are put into place, establish the strategic goals, similar to what Chris described just a moment ago. Then finally, after the policy is in place and after the goals are established, adopt the plans to achieve the goals and then implement the programs and projects to make it happen and keep it in that type of linear process to increase the chances for overall success for a secure energy future for the state of Alaska. And I believe that is the end of our presentation. I don't have anything else to add, Chris.
No, I think we're ready to answer any questions that the committee may have. Thank you.
Okay. Well, thank you both very much for that brief but concise overview. Any members, some of us were, three of us, Representative Peterson, myself, and Co-Chair Miller, were actually at most of the meetings, and Representative Johansson, you were as well on the phone, and Representative Tuck, you too. But any comments or questions for Chris and Bill while we have them online? Representative Tuck?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to thank the committees and the participants that took an active role of trying to solve Alaska's energy needs. It was a real concerted activity, a real concerted effort. And I think the product that is coming out of that is reflective of all the hard work that was done. And I think this is a great step moving forward, so I look forward to see it go from start to end.
Any other comments, committee members? Well, it's the chair's intent, Co-Chair Millett and I, to introduce the bill today, not to take any public testimony on this bill and the upcoming bill, the omnibus energy bill, but merely just sort of to have the opportunity for you, the public and the listening audience, to get a first-hand look at it. And then the plan would be on Thursday, our next hearing, to begin to take public testimony and to have further discussion at that point. So, Chris and Bill, you're more than welcome to stay online and participate in the next bill or listen in. And assuming you don't have any additional comments, thank you very much for your efforts. And we will at this time move to House Bill 305 and turn it over to Jeff Turner and Adam Berg, who will walk us through the various sections of the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Jeff Turner. I'm staff for Representative Millett. We'll start with some opening comments about the legislation. House Bill 305 is a result of a year-long effort to find out what Alaskans need to meet their energy needs now and in the years to come. The House Special Committee on Energy held field hearings on a statewide energy plan in 9 communities outside of Juneau. 5 of those were off the road system. I can say that it was a learning experience for all of us, legislators, staff, and of course the Alaskans who attended the committee meetings. The committee also held a hearing at the 2009 Alaska Federation of Natives Annual Convention in Anchorage on October 23rd. That was, as Representative Millett mentioned earlier, the first time a legislative committee meeting was held as part of AFN's official agenda. The result of those hearings is the 2 pieces of legislation we have before us today, House Bill 306, the State Energy Policy Bill that the committee just reviewed, and House Bill 305, the House Energy Committee's 2010 Omnibus Energy Bill. The bill combined 9 different energy-related pieces of legislation into one. House Bill 148, Energy Efficiency Standards for Public Buildings, was sponsored by Representative Les Guerra. House Bill 191, Nuclear Energy Production, sponsored by Representative Craig Johnson. House Bill 196, Alternative Energy Revolving Loan Fund. House Bill 218 creates a State Department of Energy. House Bill 219, Renewable Energy Grant Requirements, were all sponsored by the House Special Committee on Energy. Senate Bill 31 creates renewable energy tax credits. That was sponsored by Senator Lisa McGuire. Senate Bill 71, Alternative Energy Systems for Public Works, was sponsored by Senator Gene Theriault. Senate Bill 121, Energy Efficiency Standards for Public Buildings, was sponsored by the Senate Resources Committee. And Senate Bill 150, an Emerging Energy Technology Fund, was also sponsored by Senator Lisa McGuire. And the bill you have before you today is the framework for an omnibus energy bill, and it will be refined throughout the legislative session.
Okay, Adam Berg here from Representative Edgman's office. I can go right into the sectional if that's the easiest thing to do.
Not seeing any comments or questions from committee members. I think we should just go through it section by section, if you would, Adam.
Okay. Just for starters, when I go through it, obviously the sectional doesn't line up all the time with the bill, so I'll just mention which bill each section came from at the end of explaining it if you want to jot it down or anything else. Section 1, starting right off, would require Department of Education to assure energy efficiency in our schools that would meet or exceed the requirements of the 2009 International Energy Conservation Code. Future meetings, we will have experts here who can talk about what exactly those codes mean. But that was something that came from the committee. Wasn't in an existing bill. Section 2 would require Department of Education to review plans for construction of new schools to ensure energy efficiency. It would also require them to look at existing power sources in a community when they're determining school sites. That also came from the committee. Section 3 adds the term facility regarding permitting for nuclear materials. This is something that we're actually reviewing right now. The goal with any of the sections of House Bill 191, which is where this came from, is to take out the express prohibitions that are currently in state statute. There's express prohibitions on that would allow somebody to consider using nuclear power as an option. So all those sections are still under review, but that's going to be the end goal with House Bill 191. Section 4 assures that the legislature acts in the interest of regulating the economics of nuclear energy when locating a nuclear facility. It also removes a current requirement that would have the governor approve a permit for that facility. Sections 5 and 6 are confirming amendments to statutory changes that come up later, and they're all related to the Department of Energy bill. So these are just cleaning up statutes, moving an agency from one area to another. Section 7, that's House Bill 218, by the way. Section 7 requires the Alaska Supreme Court to comply with the State Energy Use Reduction Plan, which again comes up in a later section, in regards to their court facilities, and that comes from House Bill 148. Section 8 requires Department of Transportation review the option of using alternative energy when adopting plans and specs for any public works. That comes from Senate Bill 71. Section 9 requires an agency requesting an appropriation over $1 million for capital improvements to attach an energy audit report, proposal for energy efficiency improvements, and a cost savings analysis along with their capital request. That comes from House Bill 148. Section 10 adds the Alaska Energy Authority Board of Directors to the official board's state commissioner board's statutory list. There's a future section that will restructure the AEA board, so again, this is kind of a conforming amendment, but it's from House Bill 218. Section 11 would move ANGDA to the new Department of Energy from the Department of Revenue. I believe you have a sectional that has a typo and says it's an AEA. It's not, it's ANGDA, just for your own notes. Sections 12 and 13 both deal with requirements of the Renewable Energy Fund. Section 12 deals with the methodology AEA uses to weigh project proposals. And Section 13 requires they hire an economist or financial analyst with experience in the area of renewable energy to prepare written evaluations of each grant proposal. And I would note that we've been talking with Sarah and Steve at AEA. We do have some different language that's been suggested. It's not in front of you right at this point. And also we understand AEA may be doing a lot of these things internally already. We'll have them available at a future meeting to discuss what they're doing currently and whether this is needed. Both of these sections really originated from a ledge audit report, which a lot of you probably remember from last year when the Round 1 Renewable Energy Fund awards were being reviewed. Section 14 creates the Emerging Energy Technology Fund. This fund would be used to make grants or loans for research, development, or demonstration projects designed to test new energy technologies or methods of conserving energy, to improve existing technologies, or to applied research projects that employ technologies that aren't quite commercially viable yet, but appear to be on that track. I'd note too, this comes from Senate Bill 150, Senator McGuire, and we have put a little different twist on what they proposed in their bill. Their bill would be administered by ASAP from the university. We were suggesting it be administered by AEA and have set it up in a similar way to the Renewable Energy Fund process they have. Section 15 amends the definition of power project or project to allow nuclear energy production as it applies to projects in 42.45. That's that chapter of Title 42 covers rural and statewide energy programs. Section 16 adds a renewable energy production tax credit as an exception to a tax credit limitation set for corporations. This would be for computation of corporate income tax. Comes from Senate Bill 31. Also Senator McGuire. Section 17 deals with that same bill and it establishes that tax credit as part of the Alaska Net Income Tax Act. In the other body's committee, they were wondering about some of the definitions, renewable versus alternative. I will say, if you're interested in the definition of a renewable here, it's defined on page 13, lines 8 and 9. People should be able to find the definitions for this, but certainly ask if you need more information from us. Section 18 adds the Department of Energy to the list of state government offices and departments. Again, that's from our Department of Energy bill. Section 19 actually creates the Department of Energy and houses the home and energy conservation and weatherization programs in the department. Again, from House Bill 218. Section 20 would task Department of Transportation with updating the Energy Use Index database and conducting energy audits of public facilities that are determined to have substantial energy inefficiency. That database I referred to is actually created in Section 26 of this bill. We're not there yet, but it comes from Senate Bill 121. Section 21 requires Department of Transportation to submit a report to the legislature summarizing those audits mentioned in the last section, again from Senate Bill 121. Section 22 tasks Department of Transportation with preparing and adopting a state energy use reduction plan. Again, the 2009 IECC International Code is referenced in Section 1. We will have somebody here to answer any detailed questions on that in the future. This section would also allow the department to enter into performance contracting, meaning payments are conditional on you saving money through the work that's been done. Section 23 transfers the Alaska Energy Authority to the Department of Energy from the Department of Commerce, again from House Bill 218. Section 24 reconstitutes the membership of the Board of Directors at AEA. Currently, the ADA and AEA board members are one and the same. This section would remove the ADA board members from serving as AEA board members. And the way we have it set up, you would have the Commissioner of Energy, Commissioner of Revenue, another commissioner appointed by the governor, and then four public members appointed by the governor. Section 25 is just a conforming statute to the last section. Section 26 directs AEA to establish an energy use index for public facilities. The index would measure baseline energy consumption data for all state-owned or controlled facilities. And that's from Senate Bill 121. Section 27 adds nuclear energy production to the definition of power project or project, once again, as it applies to projects subject to AEA statutes. It's currently expressly not permitted. Section 28 amends the Alternative Energy Revolving Loan Fund by adding some potential funding sources to the fund. This is from House Bill 196 that we actually moved out of this committee last year, and but we included it in the omnibus bill because it hasn't passed the House. So, Section 29 of the bill assures that the loans from that fund are only used for projects located in Alaska. Section 30 amends the loan terms for that same loan fund. These are all from House Bill 196. Section 31 amends the term alternative energy system to allow high efficiency wood pellet stoves. We have made a deletion in line 22 there of the word wood from what passed from the committee, and I just got to say this is a work in progress. We're trying to figure out a way what the correct terminology is to allow people upgrading wood stoves that are efficient. We're just trying to find the right level of what should work, and we're not there yet. So, Section 32 amends the definition of alternative energy system in 4611 by deleting the reference to nuclear fuel. 4611 deals with the conservation of energy and materials. The only section I found within 4611 using that definition talks about the financing of energy-efficient homes and buildings. Section 33 is a repealer section, and you should have copies in your packet of the language that we're saying should be repealed, but basically what they are there's a statute prohibiting the transport of high-level nuclear waste in Alaska. That's one. Second one is an AHFC statute governing home energy conservation and weatherization, and we're deleting that because we're actually moving it to a different department. There's a sweep provision in the Alternative Energy Revolving Loan Fund that we are suggesting you repeal. Again, that came from 196, and that would just allow that fund to make money rather than being swept at the end of the fiscal year. We are also repealing previous Alternative Energy Revolving Loan Fund interest rates section and another section from that bill that would have allowed, or that did allow, transferring or selling mortgages and or notes. The last sections deal with sections we've previously talked about, but Section 4 repeals the renewable energy production tax credit on January 1st of 2025, so just it puts an end date out there. Section 35 assures that any unused tax credits may not be carried forward on taxes after December 31st of that year. Section 36 gives AEA 6 months to establish the Energy Use Index database that we talked about a few sections ago. They would have 6 months from the effective date of this act. Section 37 requires DOT submit an energy performance report to the legislature no later than January 30 of next year. And Section 38 just sets up the initial appointment of directors to the newly reconstituted AEA board. We can get into that if anybody has any questions on that point, on those terms. And in closing, just because we have had lots of questions about funding recommendations from various people, I wanted to note that this bill doesn't contain any funding recommendations for any programs or projects. The co-chairs felt it was a little early to start talking about realistic numbers for any of this, and they both intend to work with the finance chairman on those recommendations when the time comes. So, any questions?
Thank you, Adam, and I think maybe a couple of the points are in order before we get to committee questions and sort of any comments on the bill that might be there from committee members. And that is that an omnibus bill by definition is a bill that sort of incorporates all of the above, if you will. But clearly this bill, in terms of the energy field, doesn't include all of the above because there's a number of weighty energy-related topics that are out there, such as the Gretzky bill, the Greater Rail Belt Electricity Transmission Corporation bill, and certainly a whole slew of gas line topics. There's a few bills that I think Co-Chair Milt will want to talk more on that aren't incorporated into this bill. And there's also some other topics that really the committee felt that it would set aside for now, but maybe later incorporate into the bill, such as the broad spectrum of programs that the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation has, the Home Energy Rebate Program, the Weatherization Program, and a few other programs out there that might work their way into the legislation as a committee rolls up their sleeves and gets more into the overall details involved with the various bills that are out there, and certainly the bills that are into the omnibus as it stands today. And Co-Chair Millett, did you want to make any comments and what's in the bill or maybe what's not in the bill at this point?
Sure. Thank you, Co-Chair Edgman. Two outstanding issues that we didn't address in the bill were, Bryce mentioned, was the Gretzky and the in-state gas line. And I'll start with the Rail Belt Electrical Transmission Corporation. We worked pretty heavily this summer with the utilities as they went through their meeting process to come up with some language. When we left last session, there seemed to be a misalignment, if you will, with the six utilities that were going through the process, and they asked to have some time this summer to get the six individual co-ops together and come up with a cohesive piece of legislation that they could all agree with, and then they'll bring it to the committee, and we'll look at those pieces and offer a CS at some point in time if those things are palatable to the committee members and to Co-Chair Edgman and the administration. So that is going to be something that we're looking for on February 1st, and it won't be incorporated into the bill. It is a standalone bill. It's a large piece of legislation. It has still some outstanding issues on regulatory, on control of the IRP, on an opt-in, opt-out basis of the new corporation when it comes to state assistance on generation and transmission. So we're looking forward to see what the utilities come up with on their own without legislative hearings. The other issue that's not included in this is an in-state gas line or gas storage at this point. We do have some bills that got introduced that have some tax credits for gas storage. We feel that would probably go nicely with our tax credits for renewable energy in this bill, so we'll probably be looking at pulling some of that language out and putting it in this bill for gas storage. One of the issues that we did see with the gas storage bill, it was only for a third-party gas storage, and we'd like to see that that produce their own gas storage receive similar credits as they absorb those costs for starting up gas storage, and there's some heavy capital investment, so we don't want to limit it to just a third-party gas storage facility. The last thing that I will say is Co-Chair Edgman and I have talked about, there's been a lot of talk amongst our colleagues and in the public about, we have a lot of projects for the rail belt sitting out there. We have an IRP that we just spent a couple million dollars doing. One of the things that this committee is committed to doing is taking a comparative analysis of project by project, putting those projects side by side, the gas line, the two hydro projects, Chacachamna, Susitna, the wind farm, Mount Spur, Healy Clean Coal needs to be considered, and then the coal gasification across the bay from where I live. So those projects, we are putting together a list of folks we'd like to get in on it, probably a Saturday, much like the roundtable we did last year, and compare the projects side by side. So folks, especially because I haven't seen a good comparative done with all those projects for the cost of power, the timeline, the investment for the state, and then the regulatory hurdles that each of those projects will face. And I think that's something that as we go forward and we do want to come up with some funding recommendations, that we have that information in front of us so we know what it's going to cost the consumer for each project and what the time frame is, because a lot of these folks here, Representative Peterson, Representative Tuck, and I understand the issues facing South Central are coming upon us fast. So those are the things that we'll be working on and that aren't in the bill, that we understand that there's been some questions why it's not in the bill, and there you have the explanation. Thank you.
Thank you, Co-Chair Millett. Committee members, comments, questions? I guess any observations, Representative Tuck?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just curious, as we start hearing other bills come into the committee, at that time, will we decide through amendment to include it in the omnibus bill, or will we, is that how I've never done an omnibus bill before, I've been part of it. Is that how the routine will most likely happen?
I think so. You know, obviously, as was just described, there's going to be some subjects that won't be incorporated into the bill. They're just weighty subjects that are deserving of their own independent legislation. But something like the home energy rebate program, for example, might be something, were there to be something that the committee wanted to include in the omnibus bill, something that we could fold into the bill and actually work well with the other, the great list of items that we have in the omnibus bill. So, I think it's the expectation of both co-chairs that, that we are going to spend a number of hearings on the omnibus bill, and we are going to undertake, a lot of time to dig into some of these issues. Some of these bills, obviously, were sponsored by individuals who know a lot more about the bills, they and their staff, than we do as a committee at this point. And so we'll learn as we go and really decide as we go what we think collectively would strengthen the bill and or even merit maybe taking out of the bill. If we find something that we agree as a committee doesn't suit our objectives, we'll take it out. So hopefully that answers your question, Representative.
Yeah, it sure does. And then we can do the same thing as we hear, or as we see Senate bills being introduced too. We can go ahead at that time, take amendments if we choose to with the committee during the hearings.
Absolutely.
Before it even gets to our body, but be able to look into.
Absolutely. And on behalf of Co-Chair Millett, we did do our best to work with the Senate and with the governor's staff. The governor's senior energy policy advisor, his first meeting might have been with us in our working group back in early September, and so we really tried hard to be all-encompassing and to work with Alaska Energy Authority, Mr. Higginson and his staff, as well as all the long list of stakeholders that played an instrumental role in our energy policy bill. So when we got to this point down here in Juneau with really no small undertaking at hand to put an omnibus energy bill together, that we had a lot of our homework, if you will, sort of done during the summer and the fall months.
And Mr. Chair, if you don't mind, I have a question that maybe Adam and Jeff can answer. And this is regarding line 27, section 32, page 19. we have a definition for renewable energy, and it looks like, and maybe I'm not following it all the way, but are we taking out nuclear fuel as a definition for alternative energy?
That is what is proposed there right now.
Adam, do you want to put yourself on the record?
Oh, yeah, sorry. Adam Berg, staff representative, Edgman. That is correct. That definition, Representative Tuck, applies to Title 4611, which is dealing with the conservation of energy and materials. The only place I saw alternative energy system referenced in that section, or in that, in 4611, was dealing with the financing of energy-efficient homes and buildings. Once again, our intention with anything from House Bill 191 is to continue to review it, take out the spots where it is expressly prohibited. If that doesn't make sense in this section, you know, it's certainly, you know, topic for discussion here. But that's the intention with all the 191 references.
Follow up, Representative Tech.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. But I also see that we're also trying to remove restrictions to some nuclear programs. Is that correct, or did I misunderstand?
In Alaska, there are several spots in the statutes, again, Adam Berg, several spots in the statutes where nuclear energy is prohibited as an option. Our intention is to take out those express prohibitions unless, you know, it doesn't make sense for some reason and you guys decide not to have them or to keep them there.
Mr. Chair? Sorry, I just want to make sure I get this really, because I know we're trying to remove restrictions to allow it, but then I'm trying to, I just want to make sure that this removing nuclear fuel isn't going to create a restriction, but we're trying to, just for the loan program, is where we're looking that it may not fit as far as energy conservation. Is that, am I misunderstanding what you said earlier?
Through the chair, Representative Tuck, you might be talking about the old House Bill 196 loan program. Is that what you're talking about? Alternative system, alternative energy loan program?
No, not necessarily, but I just want to make sure we're not contradicting ourselves. If we're trying to remove restrictions to allow it, but then we're removing it from a definition, what definition would it fall under? Because it doesn't fall underneath renewable either.
Yeah, Representative Tuck, what we're doing there by removing that language is we're allowing it to be considered alternative energy system. That's what it does. As the statute read before we deleted that language, if...
Oh, I'm sorry. Forgive me.
Yeah.
I just read it through. Sorry about that. Forgive my ignorance. That is not dependent on, so forgive me.
Yeah. Oh.
I didn't mean to walk the committee through that big process. Vice Chair Johansson, comments?
Yeah, I guess so. The only reason I don't have any questions is this, this whole process has probably been the best process I've ever been through to get to this point, to get a piece of legislation on the table. And it comes from the leadership of the chairs and also the work of the staff of being inclusive. So everything in here we've been talking about for months and months and months. And so I don't have any questions, but I think these two guys here, these two freshmen who haven't been part of this process very, very long, should feel pretty blessed because this was an unbelievable process. I've gone through a lot of bills in my career, and this is the best process I've ever gone through. And it's so I don't have any questions because we've been talking about it for months.
Thank you for those comments, and it'd be the hope of the co-chairs that we would continue forward in an inclusive manner and spend time with individual committee members on issues such as what Representative Tuck was just talking about, the issue of nuclear power in Alaska, an issue that largely for many years has been dormant and sort of untalked about, with the exception of maybe Galena and a few other places. Mm-hmm. But have that type of atmosphere here that we could be talking about a number of the components that are in the bill as we move forward. Representative Peterson, any comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, first of all, I agree with the member across the table from me. I thought it was a great process this summer. We had some very lively discussions at some points, you know, and had numerous viewpoints from different members of the group that we eventually came to an understanding, and I think everyone was not completely satisfied, but I think everyone felt like their opinions were certainly heard, and they got an opportunity to put their two cents worth in, so to speak. And so I thought it went really well. Obviously, this bill does cover a wide area of topics dealing with energy, and so we probably still have a little work to do left on it. But I think it's we're at a great starting point, and so I'm hopeful that we'll be able to solve whatever questions are left with this bill and move it through the process before we run out of time this spring.
Thank you, Representative Peterson. Co-Chair Miller, did you have any sort of closing comments or anything more that you wanted to add to the discussion?
I think Representative Edgeman, the only thing left to do is just to thank the committee. We took them on quite a roadshow this summer and appreciate all of your willingness to leave town and leave your families and work on interim. And I know some folks have jobs in the summertime and it was tough to get away, but I appreciate the committee was well-traveled, and we had a lot of other representatives that went on trips with us throughout the House, and taking that time to go and to listen to Alaskans was probably the most important aspect of this legislation, getting folks to Bethel, to Dillingham, to Nome, to Cots, to Olegonek, to Kasigluk, and it was a phenomenal experience. I think that not only did we gain a lot of knowledge, but we gained a lot of respect for the diversity of our state and the different energy issues that Alaskans are facing, and instead of being urban-centric or rural-centric, I think we've struck a good balance between regional balance and needs for our state in both the policy bill and the larger bill. So I just want to thank the committee and again to our staff, and I see Representative Johansson's staff out there. Sonia, you've been really helpful in the process. I appreciate it. And Adam and Jeff, I know you're sick of us, but thanks for putting up with all the hard work and the coordination that you did with all the communities you went to. It was very beneficial for the legislature, especially in a 90-day session, to use interim time to do some heavy lifting. And now we're, the clock is ticking, so it's going to get busy, and I appreciate your dedication.
And before we conclude the meeting, let me again remind everyone in the listening audience that our expectation is to bring both these bills up on the next hearing on Thursday, same room, same time, and to get more into the details of the bill. But a couple things worth noting, again, before we conclude, is that Co-Chair Millett mentioned that we held the first ever hearing at the Alaska Federation of Natives Convention, which was a neat. But we also held the first ever legislative hearing in Alaska Dutch Harbor, 1,100 miles removed from Anchorage, and that was quite an experience and a treat to be involved in as well. Let me also say that you know, as a rural legislator, in my view, there are a number of sort of separate tracks related to energy ongoing this session, and it's very pleasing to see that energy will be a dominant theme in the next 80 some odd days. And that for those of you out there who may be wondering about the here and the now and the long list of programs that are really important to the sustainability of a community, those discussions, although maybe not directly reflected in the legislation in front of us, will be taking place throughout the Capitol and the Finance Committees. And I'm talking about power cost equalization, low-income heating assistance programs, weatherization programs that are out there, just a number of immediate and proven programs that are already in place and already helping Alaskans combat the extraordinarily high cost of energy that certainly aren't going to go away anytime in the near term. We will be planning on taking public testimony at the meeting on Thursday. So those of you certainly present here in the Capitol who wish to be involved in that. We invite you to the hearing on Thursday, and those of you who can participate by teleconference at the various LIOs scattered around the state or on the off-net sites, we invite you to either get a hold of the Legislative Information Office closest to you or to get a hold of our staff here in the building, and we will set you up with accommodations in order to participate. And with that, and not seeing any more comments from committee members, thank you all for participating, and we will adjourn the meeting at 4 o'clock.